Baroness Cox.
My lords, 60 years after the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, millions of people around the world still suffer because of their beliefs and the expression of those beliefs. Article 18 is often only half-heartedly supported by national governments, and at the United Nations, it is one of the least developed freedoms in terms of international human rights mechanisms and is currently being contested through anti-defamation resolutions. My lords, the subject is so vast, I cannot do justice to it. I'm therefore extremely grateful to all noble lords speaking who will address issues which I cannot include. Paul Marshall, in the definitive book, Religious Freedom in the World, highlights the extent of violations of freedom. I quote, "Some, the Baha'i in Iran, the Ahmadiyya in Pakistan, Buddhists in China, Tibet, Falun Gong in China, Christians in Saudi Arabia, are now among the most intensely persecuted. But there is no group in the world that does not suffer to some degree because of its beliefs. Atheists and agnostics can also suffer from religious persecution. Violations of religious freedom are massive, widespread, and in many parts of the world, intensifying." End of quote. My lords, I briefly highlight a few examples. First, Nigeria, because of the urgency of the situation there, with attacks just last weekend on the Christian community in Bauchi State, with at least 12 people killed, over 1,500 displaced, 14 churches, 8 vicarages, 1 mosque, and numerous Christian homes destroyed. At least one person was killed yesterday, and with disturbing reports of, quote, armed men gathering in the bush, further attacks are feared. There have been many such outbreaks of orchestrated violence since the introduction of Sharia law in 12 northern and central states, causing an estimated 60,000 deaths and much destruction. Last July, I visited a town in Bauchi State where 8 churches had recently been destroyed, and in Kano City, a Roman Catholic church was bulldozed by the authorities the week we were there. And last November, Jos suffered a series of well-planned, coordinated attacks by Islamist extremists. So may I ask the Minister if Her Majesty's Government will urge the Government of Nigeria to fulfil its constitutional responsibility to protect all its citizens. In Burma, my lords, the SPDC military regime is notorious for its brutal suppression of Buddhist monks and the systematic oppression of non-Buddhists. The Rohingya Muslim people are denied citizenship and suffer systematic discrimination. Mosques and madrasas have been demolished, and, to quote a Rohingya leader, "We are a people at the brink of extermination." Christians also suffer. Last month, over 100 house churches were forced to close, and pastors were threatened with imprisonment. While in Chin State, Christians have been forced to destroy crosses and churches and to build Buddhist pagodas in their place. May I ask the Minister whether Her Majesty's Government will make strong representations to the SPTC concerning religious persecution in Burma today? Turning to Sudan, in 1983, the government's attempt to introduce Sharia law throughout this religiously diverse country led to the outbreak of civil war. Subsequently, the Islamist National Islamic Front regime, the NIF, seized power in 1989 and explicitly declared jihad against the predominantly Christian and animist African tribes, the southern Sudan, and the religiously diverse people, the Nuba Mountains and southern Blue Nile. I visited those war-torn areas 30 times, and I witnessed the use by the NIF of aerial bombardment of civilian targets, massacres, torture, rape, and scorched earth policies, resulting in 2 million dead, 4 million displaced, and thousands taken into slavery. In 2005, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, the CPA, was signed, but the National Congress Party's policies in Darfur still include forcible Arabization of African peoples and lands, and the imposition of its extremist form of Islam. Will Her Majesty's Government do more to impress upon the government of Northern Sudan its responsibility to ensure the safety of all its citizens? In India, the recent terrorist attack in Mumbai, which caused such massive suffering, is widely believed to have been Islamist-inspired. But previous outbreaks of violence include massacres in Gujarat in 2002, when up to 2,000 people, mostly Muslims, perished, and subsequently in 2008, attacks on Christians in Orissa State by Hindu fundamentalists, with more than 50,000 people displaced, 70 confirmed dead, some burnt alive, 252 Christian places of worship, and some 4,000 Christian homes destroyed. And Christians continue to be threatened with forced conversion to Hinduism if they return to their villages. During a visit in October, we met many of the thousands of Christians still living in appalling conditions in overcrowded camps. Will Her Majesty's government urge the Indian government to ensure that the state government brings those responsible for the violence to justice and provides all help needed to enable people to return to their homes, and in the meantime, to ensure adequate healthcare and food in the camps? In North Korea, given the obligatory personality cult of the political leadership, there has been harsh repression of religion. Buddhist temples and other places of worship have been eliminated, and defectors testify to the public executions of Christians and their harsh treatment in prison camps where many perish. 3 weeks ago, my noble friend Lord Alton and I visited North Korea. We concluded that it is better to build bridges than walls and recommended, inter alia, that the time has come for the United States to normalize relations with North Korea, and we welcomed education exchanges with Britain. But we also emphasized our concern over human rights violations, including religious persecution. We visited the Roman Catholic Church in Pyongyang and expressed our concern that there is still no Catholic priest in North Korea. We were slightly more encouraged by the beautiful new Russian Orthodox Cathedral with two priests who had studied in Moscow. And we were pleased to see that the Protestant Church at Bongsu has been enlarged since I worshipped there 5 years ago, and there is now a seminary with 10 students with academic links to Kim Il-sung University and the Academy of Social Sciences, allowing academic exchange between secular and theological institutions. In Egypt, my lords, there are serious concerns over human rights violations of non-Muslims. Muslim converts to Christianity are regularly detained without charges and tortured. The Egyptian state continues to prohibit changes in the religion section of national ID cards, with dire consequences for the Baha'is and Muslim background Christians with regard to marriage, education, and even the custody rights of their own children. Throughout 2007 to 2009, incidents of violence against the 10 million strong Coptic community increased, often resulting in serious injury and material damage. The historical Abu Fana Monastery has been attacked 15 times since 2004, and those responsible not brought to justice, and the Copts are still treated as second-class or dhimmi citizens with limited access to their civic and political rights. And even here in Britain, there is concern over pressures in some communities to inhibit freedom to choose and to change religion. In particular, reported cases of intimidation of British Muslims who wish to leave Islam and or to convert to another faith. The final issue I wish you to raise is the worrying resolution adopted by the UN General Assembly for a fourth consecutive year, entitled Combating Defamation of Religions. This calls on national governments to legislate for the protection of religion from defamation. It is sponsored by the OIC and seeks to criminalise any criticism of Islam with specific reference to human rights abuses and terrorism. It is widely seen as a device to protect Islamic states from any criticisms of violations of human rights. And in an interim report, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion and Belief highlights concerns, I quote, that the lack of an objective definition of the term defamation of religion makes the whole concept open to abuse, and that attempts to protect religions from defamation are really seeking to protect religion from critical evaluation and aiming to stifle religious dissent, end of quote. May I ask the Minister whether Her Majesty's government will continue to resist these proposals? My Lords, in conclusion, many people argue that freedom of religion and belief should be given greater weight in British foreign policy. Unlike the US State Department, which has an entire department dedicated to freedom of religion and belief, the Foreign Office has only one person in its human rights team responsible for this issue, along with other human rights concerns. Therefore, may I ask, Noble Lord the Minister, if Her Majesty's Government will give serious, sympathetic consideration to responding positively to this proposal, perhaps by consideration of the appointment of a special envoy for freedom of religion and belief. My Lords, we who have freedom surely have an obligation to use our freedom on behalf of those who are denied it. It is my hope that this debate may make some contribution, however small, to highlighting these issues and the need to respond more effectively to those suffering for their beliefs, whatever those beliefs may be. William Wilberforce's words, when introducing legislation to end the slave trade, apply to violations of religious freedom today. We can no longer plead ignorance. We cannot turn aside.
My Lord,